Committee, the Full Ways and Means, and open the work session for Senate Bill 5527. And since we don't have a quorum, and last week when we had our public hearing, Mr. Wilbur Turnick, who is a consultant from over the coast and done work all over the state, asked if he could come in today and give testimony. So, Mr. Turnick, if you'd like to come up and give your name for the record, and until we have a full quorum, where you're welcome to inform us of your lifetime experiences.
Yes, my name is Wilbur Turnick, and I live in Florence, Oregon, at 921 Rhododendron, and appearing here today to talk to you, I don't think I've ever testified in front of a group of people that had a more impossible task this year in trying to settle the budget problems of the state of Oregon, and I commend every one of you for your diligence in trying to do that. And several things I want to talk about today that may have a bearing, and first of all, I want to say that I'm 100% strongly in favor on adequate budget for the Division of State Lands. I've worked with this agency now for, 20-some years through all kinds of directors. They've all been very good. We've had our problems sometimes in working through permits and things on the wetlands. And currently there's some problems that I want to talk about. And certainly has nothing to do with the type of personnel they have. John Lowy, Steve Purchase, and Hannah, right on down the line, are top people. However, we came up with a new checklist this last year. It's going to improve things. And I think the effort was headed in the right direction. You go down through all these checklists on your delineation, your wetland delineation, and your 404 application, and everything's going to be fine. Not necessarily so. Ever since that went into effect, I have got, and most of the other delineators too that I work with, incompletes. Now, the incomplete means that stalling on the time when you're going to get a permit. There's no question about that. And the problem I have with that is that I've got one project here now. It's a 106-acre subdivision, and it's 116 acres for 32 wetlands. That's pretty complex. There's no doubt about it. However, we started in November. Here we are now, and we still have questions to answer on that particular project. And when is the man ever going to get to build anything? I have other projects. I talked to a contractor last night. I said, well, how many people does it take? How many people do you employ when you build a stick-built house? He said 10 full-time, 3 months for every house that he builds. That's a pretty good economic stimulus if you multiply that. We're working on four different subdivisions in the state of Oregon right now where we haven't got our permits to go ahead yet. A week ago, I was told by the Corps of Engineers, Larry Evans, head of regulatory, that he would give us a nationwide three permit, which is a very short period. 5.5 days, we'd have the permit, and the man could go ahead because he has his contractors right on there. I went to DSL and I talked to them.
Mr. Turnick, do we have a question from Representative Morgan?
Mr. Turnick, you were saying that you had incompletes on some of the things that you were on your application and that you still had questions left to answer. Can you talk to me a little bit about what's the nature of the questions? What kinds of things are hanging you up?
I'd have to read them all to you to go through because there's 24 of them on this one project, but it will have questions about the functions of the lost wetlands, the impacted wetlands, and it'll have questions about the functions that are going to be lost or gained in the mitigation project. And then it'll say that we want a drawing of the actual mitigation site, complete with the spacing, the type of plant you're going to plant. My problem with that is that in the one case I sent it in, and it was already there. And I asked him, I said, please go back and look, because it is there, I know it is. And he called back and said, yes, it was. And then I wrestled for 2 days last week with trying to come up with the HGM classifications for a project on the coast, only to find out there isn't any. I called the other people who are working in the wetland field to find out what classifications we'd have on the coast. Well, the problem is that DSL is working on that now. We'll have them next year. So, they're small things, but my plea is that we have to get some way that we can get these things through in a hurry. So if we're going to jumpstart the economy in this state, then we have to get these projects going. And am I at fault sometimes? You bet I am, just like everybody else, and you'll miss something. But when you have 24 different things that you have to address on one permit application, that gets to be overwhelming as you're trying to do other ones. I'm going to hand in a delineation I have here down at Sutherland. And I don't know whether the project's going to go or not, but if it does, it's really going to be a boost because it's an electric car factory site. It will have 650 jobs. The minimum wage is $16.50 an hour. Those kind of people, and it's a reported $800 million investment. When they come to Oregon, they don't want to fool around. If they decide to go, they want to build it. They don't want to be sitting around for a while. So those kind of things. Now, is that DSL's fault? I don't think so. They have to have adequate funds to be able to handle all of these new things that we in the field are faced with. And I'm sure that if they get adequate funds, things will move on through. But the main reason I came over here today from Florence was to make sure that I let you know that as one wetland delineator, a consultant working in the field, I very much support having adequate funds. Now, what adequate funds is, that's up to you folks to determine. But by the same token, we've got some awful good people in the field. I'm going to make one more plea here that I make every time I come over here on this subject. ESL, the representative leaving here to go to Brookings, is 5 hours away. When he comes home, he's 5 hours coming home. The Corps has put personnel to handle the wetland program on the coast. And I'm absolutely 100% convinced, and I have been for a long, long time, that if we had field offices on the coast, there would be a big savings and a better communication as far as the coastal residents and folks here in Salem. Just to show you one other thing, too. You've got all of these, what I think are really good forms now, and we have to respond to those, and that's great. But they called me back on a project in Sutherland, a different one, and said, you didn't dig test pits on all the wetlands, and you have to go back and you have to pick up these other 5 wetlands. Well, we never have had to do that before, and why? Because these wetlands were of a size of 207 acre, one of them even 5,000 of an acre, maybe the size of this part of this room. And we had to go back and do data sheets. I really do not believe that's constructive at all, because when we send them in, somebody has to review those data sheets to see that we did them correctly. And if that wetland was similar to all the rest of the wetlands on the site, and we've already checked the hydric soil, know that's there, then I just think that's a waste of time. That's a procedural thing that I'm sure John and Steve will probably address sometime, but it's getting more difficult to get these done. The delineators that I work with, there's 4 different ones, figure that the new system, which is supposed to, you know, help out, is probably doubling the amount of time that we have to spend on one and the cost for the clients. And some of these questions that are being asked, which and are in-depth and maybe more than you would normally have, are no fault of DSLs. They're caused by the clients that you have sometimes who are willing to fudge on the law. And when that happens, why, if I were working for the DSL staff, yes, I'd be a little tougher on those people. There's no question about it. I want to know. And it's up to us working with them to try to get them out of trouble. American Bridge down in Reedsport, a real opportunity to have some economic development in the Reedsport area, which is really suffering. And yet they came to Oregon without realizing what they were getting into in the way of permits and what they had to go through. And I've recently went to work for them because it's fairly simple to get through their project. But here's a company that's going to be bidding on jobs in San Francisco on multi-million dollar bridges. Everything will be manufactured there and shipped out of our state, and a lot of good jobs. So I guess my plea that again is that DSL have an adequate budget to do the job, and that we try to iron out some of these problems here so that we can get these what I call nitpicking things. And why do we get different ones? Because different personnel down the line that are reviewing our permit applications interpret what they need out of these lists differently. They're not all the same. One person will look at something that we've got in our permit application and say, yeah, that's covered. The next one will say, no, maybe it isn't. And I want further information, you know. But we need some way to speed up the process.
Representative Morgan.
I think I hear you saying several different things here. One of the things that sticks with me is I hear you saying that that the process is too complicated. And another thing I hear you say is that the process appears to be designed for the people that break the rules to make sure that everybody does exactly the correct thing all the way through. Am I correct here?
And I don't think it's designed to take care of that problem. The only reason I mentioned that is that when you have a client who has violated the wetland law before, then that's a red flag. And if I run a DSL staff and looking at an application on that particular person, and sometimes it's four or five times in a row, you know, then yes, I'm going to really look at that one very, very closely, and I think they should. So I don't think that's built into that they should, you know, look for that in this. But I do find out that some of these things just, in my mind, unnecessary. I've been doing this now for almost 30 years, working in wetlands before the system ever started. I've done a couple of national research sites for the Vicksburg people, and so I think I'm pretty well qualified to do it, but by the same token, it gets to be overwhelming.
Follow up.
In one of the things that DEQ has been able to do is to certify people that so that they know that they're qualified to perform certain duties. And what I'm particularly thinking of is the installation of subsurface septic systems. And people that have that okay from them then get to go through an expedited permit process because the agency's willing to make the assumption that they're going to do everything right and that they've been trained and they're able to do it. Do you see any application of that concept to this process?
I think maybe despite the fact that I've worked in it all this time and done a tremendous amount of research work and everything like that, that I probably wouldn't qualify. I have no degrees of any kind. And I fought that, you know, you do all your life when you did not take advantage and go to school and get the degrees. And even to the point where when I worked for Vicksburg down the experiment research sites on the Columbia, everybody I talked to down in that area at Vicksburg Water Experiment Station had doctor's degrees. So when I got home, guess what I got? All my letters were addressed to Dr. Wilbur Turney, as if they didn't want to talk to anybody unless they had a doctor's degree. I don't think that has a lot to do with it. Hopefully I know what I'm doing.
Well, and I wasn't coming from a place where I thought that everybody needed to have a doctor's degree before they could be certified as knowing what they're doing with that. Because in DEQ, they don't do it that way at all. They just ask people to take a test, basically. And if you demonstrate your expertise, then they give you the certificate. And so I'm wondering if this is this a lot more technical, or are there, would that be a way to look at trying to expedite the permits if the person that was hired to do the permit work had previously demonstrated that they were qualified and technically knew what they were doing, and so that when they put that permit into the process, the people within the agency that were looking at the permit knew that to the training that they'd been given, to the training that the people that filled out the forms had been given, that they could trust that this was being done by the standards that the agency put forward and fast track it through there.
I believe that could be beneficial. The other thing that I think could be beneficial is it should be a requirement that whoever, you know, you go to a school in Portland, we have them all the time, delineation schools. And you go to the school, and maybe it's a two-day school. I sent my son one up to in Seattle, a three-day. He came back saying he didn't teach him anything. However, if they get a certificate, they've attended that school, then they come out and they go into the business as a consultant. No, that's not right. They should have, in my estimation, something like in the landscaping field, which I'm a landscaper too, have some experience having worked for another delineating firm or whatever you want to call it, a wetland firm, so that they, you know, they've had experience at it. I've got one in the Roseburg area now. Guess what? He went to the school. He wants to start doing it right now. It's a good job. I'm going to get good money. And, by the way, could I go out with you when you're doing delineations, and then I'll be qualified? That's not it.
I might add, committee, that Mr. Turnick's being quite humble. He had several years with the Department of Agriculture, USDA, prior to, before he started being a consultant, too, so he's had a tremendous background.
One other thing I want to bring up, and it really doesn't have anything to do with this budget, but it's a sad thing that's going on in Lane County and Western Lane County. When you've got the Forest Service in an environmental impact statement on the Oregon Dunes saying that they're going to wipe out 276 acres of depletion plain wetlands, and they're not just ordinary, they would meet statewide criteria anywhere, to create open sand. How do they do that? They're going to wipe out the fore dune out in front and let that sand completely destroy it. Their projected cost over 20 years is $30 million for the snowy plover. And when asked by Russ Crabtree at a meeting in the All Events Center in Florence, why didn't you get a permit like everybody else? The ranger said, in uncertain terms, we thought about getting a permit, but we just thought it would take too long. Now, that really raises a problem for the people that I work for who have to go through the permit system and do everything right. No delineation, no permits. Might shock you to know that in three occasions now they've had the National Guard bulldozers in both Tackenich Outlet, Silkoos Outlet, and Berry Creek Outlet. That's pretty shocking. Those are all salmon streams. And it's just unbelievable that both DSL and the Corps of Engineers, for some reason, do not have the power to regulate those people. And they do the same thing in the farms. Ken would know this on Karnowski Creek. They decided that the old ditches on each side, which I worked on and paid the farmers for working for the SCS, and then here, we ought to have a creek down the middle again. And they dig that thing right through the middle of all the wetlands. No permits, no nothing.
Why don't you stay right there? I'd like to ask the department to respond to some of this.
Okay.
Good afternoon. For the record, Steve Perch, Assistant Director for Field Operations. Let me see if I can try to respond to a number of things that I heard. And I need to back you up in history a little bit. Last session, state legislature passed Senate Bill 529. Senate Bill 529 required the Division of State Lands to clearly identify all the criteria that it would use to make a permit decision and to put that into rule and to develop these completeness summaries. We helped support that bill because we believed two things. One is that we need to do a better job of telling the regulated public what they must do to get a permit and spell it clearly out for them so you know exactly what you must do to get your permit approved by us, and to do that in a timely fashion. We were also very supportive of the timelines to do that work, 40 days to review the complete application, 90 days to make the decision. We went through a three-year rulemaking effort on that very issue of trying to address all the concerns that we heard both from the regulated public consultants, environmental groups, concerned citizens, legislators. Went through a very extensive process for over 3 years on the rulemaking effort to do that and to try to implement Senate Bill 529. The result of that is we have put together a very comprehensive checklist that every project that comes into our office, within 40 days, you receive back from us a letter saying your application is complete or it's incomplete. If your application is incomplete, with the exception of minor omissions, we did allow in the rule for some minor omissions so we can continue to process your permit. If you're missing a mitigation plan, if you're missing a number of issues, or if you have a lot of small omissions that does not constitute a complete application, then we would reject that application within that 40-day period and ask you to reapply. I'm happy to report that that standard time to do that work is 27 days for us. That's what our average is right now statewide. We also have...
Excuse me, Steve. The 27 days is the time it takes for you to respond, or the time it takes you to respond for a complete application?
Senator, that is the average time statewide it takes us to respond to the completeness review. We're allowed 40 days on the statute. Our average time statewide is 27 days. What that means, within 27 days, we've reviewed it and gotten a letter back to you saying, here's what we see in your file, here's where you're incomplete. And you not only get a letter from us, but you get the actual checkoff list that says, we're missing these items, and a little explanation on the side that says what we're missing and why we need it.
What percentage are not complete?
Right now, I'd say it's about 50%. A lot of it is on the compensatory mitigation side. A lot of it is things like lack of drawings. Sometimes they don't provide adjacent landowners. Just a number of different things that seem to be the kind of the trip up.
Representative Morgan.
Are you doing anything to try to identify why people are missing in that particular section?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, we are. We've done a number of things since we have implemented this bill. One is that we've held consultant training on several different occasions where we actually sat down and went through the completeness summary with the consultants and said, these are things that we're looking for. These are things that tend to get you thrown out, if you will, or incomplete. And if we could do a better job, the division and the consultant working together to get that issue addressed, and we'd be a lot more successful. We are going to do some follow-up training as well. We have, and we're in the process of revising our rules as well. We found a couple of things that didn't work very well for us. Nothing in the complete application issue as much as anything else. But we're working with the consulting community to try to iron those things out and do more training so we can do a better job of turning a permit decision around very quickly. We're working on that. We have been working on that for about 3+ years now.
May I have a follow-up? Are you doing anything to track over time if your incomplete applications are diminishing in number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, yes, we are. When we initiated this, Senate Bill 529 was July 1st of 2002. At that time, we were about 80% incomplete applications. We're a little bit under 50% right now, which tells me that some of our outreach and some of our efforts where we have had staff go meet with consultants or staff meet with the company to work with them to get a complete application. And one of the things that I have stressed over and over in every meeting I go to is a pre-application meeting. If you know you've got a project coming up and you know you're going to need a permit, then if you would have a pre-application meeting with us, then we can walk you through the complete application to make sure that when you give us the information that is required, that we can issue and be more timely in our response. Because all it is our completeness review has gone down from about 35 days average to 27. And it's gone from 80% incomplete application reviews down to about 50%. So I see some real positive issues there as we get better and better at the outreach.
Thank you.
Steve, and if they are incomplete the first time, do you also track if their second, third, and fourth attempts are complete, or how quick they do come that they do offer a complete application?
Mr. Chair, yes, we do. I do that informally. And I can tell you that at the start of our process in July 1st of 2002, we would have applications go up to as many as five times for incompleteness. I haven't seen any five-timers or four-timers lately, usually about the third time where we usually get it right. But we're constantly working on the ones that we see or have difficulty with to make sure people understand why we need what we need.
Are we as a department moving, and we talked about this, but I want to ask it again. Because the sense I get is that we're moving more and more to where if you need a permit from the department, you're going to have a consultant help you get through the process. Do you have breakoff points where you have different processes, and how effective is that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we do. We actually put in the rule I'll summarize it as an easier process to get a small project under 250 cubic yards and under 2/10 an acre. If you have one of those projects that you can go right to payment revised, so you can avoid having to go through the long, laborious process of identifying avoidance and minimization and all those kind of issues. So there is a process building rules where the smaller projects can be expedited even more quickly. We also have a number of general authorizations that our total time to make a decision is only 40 days by rule. So if you qualify for general authorization, you will have an issued general authorization within 40 days.
Committee, I'm going to start moving forward on the budget. Thank you, Mr. Attorney, for coming forward.
Can I say one more thing, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Throughout this whole process, this man here, John Lilly, when I get in trouble on something like this, I can call either one of them and they respond immediately. And that has to be appreciated by anybody working in the field. And some of this is difficult. There's no question about it. Hopefully I'll do a better job.
Thank you very much. Tim Glashan, would you like to lead us into the budget discussion?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I've distributed for you a memo that we'll work through for the budget recommendations on this budget, and then also the typical accompanying spreadsheet if you need to refer to that. And I'll just start walking you through the memo on that first page. Other budgets you've seen, there's some historical data provided. One of the things that I would point out in this case is the wide swing in the total budget from like 99.01 to the governor's recommended budget is primarily because of the non-limited funds, which represent the distributions of common school fund monies to schools. And those amounts have varied over the last several biennia.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a clarification question?
Representative Morgan.
Are the other funds in here primarily funding the from the revenue stream that goes into the Common School Fund?
So just in summary, Mr. Chair, the LFO recommended budget is a total of $43,456,427, and that comprises $29,311 general fund, $14,749,309 other funds, $27.1 million non-limited other funds, and $1,577,807 federal funds. The FTE in the LFO recommended budget are 85.26, and that's 86 positions. And if you include the non-limited funds in the budget. The LFO recommended budget is a 35.9% decrease from the 2103 legislatively approved budget and a 16.2% decrease from the governor's budget. If you don't include the non-limited funds, then the LFO recommended budget is a 10.6% decrease from the 0103 legislatively approved level and a 4.2% decrease from the governor's budget. And we'll be going through several budget units, and I've just listed there at the bottom of the first page for you what those are. And we'll start with the Common School Fund programs and then go to the South SLU. There's the Natural Heritage Program, the Oregon Wetlands Revolving Fund, and then capital improvements in the Common School Fund program. So if you'd like to turn to page 2, that starts you with the Common School Fund programs. And again, there's a table at the top which gives you some historical budget data. The next section is made up of the typical LFO packages, the technical type of adjustments. The first package is the employee compensation freeze, and that's eliminating the 2003-2005 merit increases included in the budget. So that's a reduction of $108,349 other funds. The department or the division has one vacant position currently, and I recommend that you keep that position. It's the manager of the trust property section, and that's a core agency program. However, instead of continuing the position at a step 5 where it's currently budgeted in the governor's budget, I would recommend that you continue it at a step 2, and that creates savings of $23,756 other funds.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
A question for the legislative fiscal staff. Is this under recruitment now?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure it is, yes. The agency indicates right now it is. Package 003, the inflation adjustment, that eliminates inflation except for facilities rental and the AG and state government service charges, which are addressed in separate packages. Eliminating the inflation results in a reduction of $85,482 other funds. Package 004 is the Attorney General rate reduction, and that results in a $56,615 other funds reduction to the budget. Package 005 is the adjustment for the Department of Administrative Services assessment, and that results in a $25,335 other funds reduction. And finally, since the development of the governor's budget, there's been a reshoot, if you will what will be available as distributions to schools from the Common School Fund. And instead of the $34.8 million that you see in the table up at the top of that page, we anticipate that the distributions for 0305 will be $27.1 million. So I'm recommending an adjustment to the non-limited funds of $7.7 million, a reduction of $7.7 million.
Why the reduction? What is that? What caused that to happen?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, it's simply a result of the formula that's used to distribute the funds to the schools. It's based in part on the ending, I think it's the December 31st value in the fund, and that is lower than what was originally anticipated when the governor's budget was put together, which was before December 31st. So that the governor's budget was based on an estimate of what they thought it would be.
And the
value of the fund.
And the formula is based on the interest that the fund has accrued?
The formula is, and I probably have to call on the agency to help me out with this, because without having the little chart in front of me, I probably won't recall it correctly, but it's based on the value of the fund, and then depending on, well.
For the record, my name is Ann Hannes, Director of the Division of State Lands. It's based on a policy formula the land board has. In this case, because there was a actual decrease year over year of the fund, then it triggers a 2% distribution. That's the minimum distribution of the land board. If the depending on how well the fund's doing, as it does better, then that percentage increases. But it looked at, as Sue was saying, year over year change in the fund.
So this is then a result of the fund not accruing enough growth. In fact, it was negative growth. It reduced in size, and so you're in the lowest category of distribution.
Chair Meserly, Representative Morgan, that's correct, and that's primarily due to the stock market, because as of the end of the year, the stock market was still down.
Okay.
And I want to apologize to you.
I've told you and other department heads at the beginning of this session that I would not run budgets until I'd had a chance to sit down with you and the co-chairs. And quite frankly, the last three budgets we've worked on, I have not met with the co-chairs either. And so what I'm going to ask you to do, if there's an issue in our budget today that you have a problem with, speak up and let us know about it. And I apologize for this, but it's just the way this process has worked this year and has made it difficult for all of us.
Can I ask a process question?
Yes, Representative Marty.
Based on losing $7.7 million in disbursements from the Common School Fund, does that put an additional hole then in the co-chair's budget?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, not for the state budget. What this would affect is the local revenues for the schools. So it's included in the state school fund overall that gets distributed through the formula.
But it's outside of the general fund basis of the co-chair's budget.
That's correct.
Okay, so it would be something that would impact the level of funding, but only from the point of view of local funds that offset the state school fund.
That's correct.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if those local funds offset the state school fund. Do they?
Mr. Chair,
there are some things that do, but I'm not sure if that's...
They are included in local revenue for purposes of the state school
fund. So it does offset? Okay. I didn't remember them.
Thank you.
So we need to approve this section, right?
Right.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on adjustment packages 001, 002, 003, 004, 005, and the base non-limited adjustment in the Common School Fund programs.
Thank you. Committee, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next section at the bottom of page 2 and then continuing on to page 3 contains the policy option packages for the Common School Fund programs. And if it helps you in your in the presentation document that the division has prepared for you or had prepared for you for the hearings, in tab 3 and starting on page 25, background information on these policy action packages. And the first package in this first policy option package in this program unit is package 101, and that's called Proprietary Revenue Protection. And this package actually continues two limited duration positions that were approved by the 2001 legislature. One has to do with waterway leasing work, and one has to do with rangeland management. And you probably recall the division was required to respond to a budget note from last session on these positions in terms of how they have contributed revenue to the Common School Fund. And there is some information on page 29, that same section. That includes that actually has information on how they relate the positions to performance measures. And sorry, I don't have this right at the tip of my fingers, but they did provide some information on the revenue generation for the waterway leasing position specifically. Back on page...
I think that was on page 22.
Exactly. Back on page 22, it talks about that. So what I'm recommending for that package, and the amount is $291,203 other funds, and again, two FTE, and these would be two limited duration positions, is that you approve that package.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to remind myself, Ms. McClashan, because I've forgotten.
It's been a while.
Will you remind me where the work on navigability is and which one of these programs as we start to move through them?
I might have to myself, Representative Johnson, call on
the agency already.
Since it has been.
It has not
been a while,
this
but it's not in this package.
Where is it?
It's actually, it's part of our base budget. It's not in any of our program option packages. And navigability, it just depends on what the nature of the issue is. Sometimes it's resolving a particular conflict, and sometimes or legal issues where in case it may be legal costs that we incur. Other times, if it's a study, it may be part of a staff's time that we reallocate to that study. So it just depends on what the nature of the issue is relating to navigability.
Well, Mr. Chair, when you're pulling people off of their regularly assigned duties to deal with those issues, how do you account for their time?
Senator Meserly, Representative Johnson, we don't track their time on a timesheet based on what their projects are actually doing, if that's what you're asking.
Obliquely, I am asking, because I hear prices for navigability studies bandied about, and I don't know if you're not tracking people's time, how those prices can be established.
I believe that we had provided an estimate for the committee. I have to look it up in my book here, but we had provided an estimate for the committee on what it took to do one study that we did. Was it the Sandy River, John? Well, I can get you that information if you'd like.
But respectfully, Ms. Hannes, if you're not tracking their time, how can you figure out what even a template cost is?
Because we estimate, we went back and we asked that individual to estimate the amount of time that they had spent on it. That person may be juggling several different projects at the same time.
Thank you. Representative Mark.
I was wanting to go back to the property revenue protection, the waterway leasing work, and I'm forgive me for not remembering any of this. But what I'm curious, I'm looking on page 29 at the from the agency performance measures and specific outcome measures for this position for the waterway leasing coordinator. And do these, what I'm not getting clearly from this is what was accomplished in the 99-01 budget period.
Senator Meserly, Representative Morgan, during this current budget period, they did 830 new leases by the four-member team. When we looked at the increase in revenues from the previous year, which would be a measure that, or from the previous biennium, which would be measure of what that extra position contributed, it was an additional $708,000.
And was the increase in revenue before you deducted the expenses or after you deducted the expenses? Was it a net number or a gross number?
Let me ask Steve. I believe that may have been a gross number in terms of the amount of revenue, so I don't believe that was a net of the salary for that position. And so if you did that, I think it would be more in the range of about $500,000 or $550,000.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have an answer for you, but I will find out.
I'd appreciate that.
Okay. So are you finished with your presentation?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Committee ready for a motion?
I'd rather get the information on how effective this position has been. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
The rangeland management position, I think that one of the issues that we discussed when we added that position in the last budget cycle was the risk of lawsuits that were relating to that. And I understand that we're back in that territory again, that we're going to revisit the same issue again with the same litigants.
Senator Misery, Representative Morgan, we actually prevailed in one case with the Oregon Natural Desert Association. The judge threw that case out. However, we've been hearing that they've been starting to request information again. We've not received notice of a lawsuit, but that could be a possibility.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, and if I'd like to point out, in terms of the waterway leasing position, if you look on pages 22, that does detail for you the exact number and type of leases, easements, and registration that they've done, as well as the revenue.
I do have another question.
We have Senator Dukes first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say a lot of this waterway leasing stuff blends in my district, and it's been remarkable to see the change since this person has come on. I have some sticky ones, sticky for a variety of reasons. Some of them would just prefer not to pay the state, thank you, and never have, so, you know, what do we think we're doing there trying to tell them they should? Some of them need help in order to comply. I know I've got one whole section where they have to be, first they had to get the county to pass an ordinance, then they had to get the people up to the ordinance level before the state could actually step in and give them a lease. And so it was important that DSL be able to work with all of the parties. That one was took a long time to get finished, and we're finally there. So it's stuff that we probably could not have gotten done without the extra person to be able to do it. Not that there were anywhere near there. We still have houseboats and duck shacks and interesting things out there that they're still working with, and that doesn't have anything to do with the marinas and the other issues. So it's just I've seen them be able to get through stuff that they probably couldn't have otherwise, and the end result has been money into the common school fund. So and constituents that are much happier because they've got agency folks talking to them and having more time for them.
Morgan. Related to the position that works on daily rangeland management, what I'm curious about is there's another package, package 110, that adds a limited duration position to focus on land management in eastern and central Oregon. Do these two positions relate to each other at all?
One person is a specialist in rangeland management and rangeland issues. The other person would be looking at a wide range of land management issues, from selling and exchanging tracts, because we have a lot of isolated tracts in eastern and central Oregon. They'd also be helping out that person that's currently there for rangelands, because we're going through and collecting information and working with lessees. One person helps, but we've got a lot of different lessees out there to work with. That other position, the Eastern Oregon Properties Manager position, will explore other types of opportunities on our lands that we currently don't have the staffing to do. For example, wind generation, geothermal, additional agricultural leases, other opportunities we just not have the staffing to do right now.
Okay, let's pass over that one until we get more information then.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to 102.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Package 102 is called Unclaimed Property Reporting Strengthening, and this is similar to 101 in that it continues limited duration positions that were approved by the 2001 legislature. This package is discussed on page 27 in that same section. And in terms of revenue generation, the division reports that the auditor position generates an average of $20 to $22 for every $1 of expenditure of an audit. This would also include a trust property assistant position, which ultimately assists in returning unclaimed property to rightful owners. And again, these are limited duration positions that were established by the 01 legislature. The total for the package is $207,508 other funds and two FTE. Again, two limited duration positions, and LFO recommends that you approve the package.
Oh, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regrettably, about the only thing that I remember from this discussion when we talked about it during the public hearing portion of the budget was that portion where there were a number of recommendations as a result of an audit. And the second conversation that we had about internal management decisions to dispatch people to drive down to Medford to deal with tracking a letter that has a return address to a Christmas card to a post office box to find somebody. And those are the sort of two overwhelming recollections that I have from the public testimony. Prior to approving this package, I guess I'm looking to get something pretty clearly on the record that talks about how you intend to deal with approaching those audit suggestions and connecting the continued limited duration positions for this unclaimed property auditing and process with the requirements of the audit.
Senator Meserly, Representative Johnson, the positions directly connected with the audit are positions are under POP 106. So those are the ones to improve the fiscal controls and outreach and relate specifically to the audit recommendations that we got. The ones under Program Option Package 102 that Sue just mentioned are two positions that are currently filled, and they deal with processing of unclaimed property claims and revenues coming in. So that's where, you know, one of these positions returns $20 to $22 for every dollar spent on a position for the Common School Fund, because it's positions that will go out there and work with businesses and look at whether or not they're complying or not complying with the state's unclaimed property laws.
Senator Morgan.
Ready for a motion?
Yes,
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on policy package 102 relating to unclaimed property reporting strengthening in the Common School Fund program.
You heard the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the next policy option package is 104, and that's entitled Building Systems Maintenance. And the department's, the division's request is for $175,000 other funds. What LFO is recommending is that you approve the package for $85,000 with instructions to the agency to request additional limitation from the emergency board once they have additional information on the cost for some of the systems maintenance projects, such as upgrading the electrical panel and replacing the security system.
So I have a question. I thought that DAS took care of the maintenance of all the state buildings. Why are we suddenly budgeting for maintenance?
Mr. Chair, the agency still has to pay for it. Even though DAS takes care of some of this, they still pay.
So the charge that DAS makes to all the departments for their buildings, what does that cover?
Mr. Chair, I believe I'm not sure exactly which charge to which you're referring.
As their DAS assessment. Right?
I can. Mr. You want me to answer that?
Sure. While I look some stuff up.
The State Lands Building is actually an asset of the Common School Fund, and so the rents from the tenants of the building benefit the Common School Fund. So when there's a major maintenance, we need to pay that as an expense of the fund. It's been very beneficial for the Common School Fund, the rent coming in. So we just, the building is now, 10, 15 years old, and there's some basic maintenance that needs to be done on the heating and air conditioning system and our roof. So the $85,000, if we had any comments on it, that's one we could live with. At this time, we're still getting estimates on some of the other costs that we need to do. So once we have those estimates, we may need to then come into the emergency board with a better estimate. But the $85,000 is one that is a pretty firm estimate at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Morgan.
So is the $85,000 the total cost to repair the heating and cooling system?
Let me have Jeanette come electrical up, because panel. Jeanette knows the building of what needs to be done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the $85,000 is to replace the cooling system in the HVAC system. We have a regularly scheduled replacement of the coolant and all that kind of stuff. But when DAS looked at it, they suggested that the whole thing be replaced and with an upgrade, because it was not functioning well as it was.
And then my question is, why is the whole cost of it being attributed to the Common School Fund?
Mr. Representative Morgan, for the record, I'm Jeanette Coleman from the Division of State Lands. We pay everything out of the Common School Fund. And since this building is an asset of the Common School Fund, we have to pay for the repairs and maintenance to the building out of the Common School Fund.
Well, DAS is basically under contract to us to maintain the building, so we have to pay DAS for that maintenance cost, as well as when there's any major repairs, we have to pay that too. So it's different than where you might have a state agency that's a tenant to DAS, and that DAS picks up everything.
So what actually do you get from DAS then in terms of service?
Janet, they provide janitorial and basic maintenance. But if you have a large capital maintenance project, such as a major roof overhaul or a major HVAC overhaul, that's where you've got to bring in a subcontract or a contractor to do that work. And that's outside of the scope of the ordinary maintenance that DAS performs.
I'm starting to feel like the poor Common School Fund has more hoses coming out of it than.
But I will say that the building is providing a good return, because we do get rent paid that benefit the Common School Fund.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yeah, regretfully I am.
Chair. It says replacement of a security system. There isn't even a security system really of any type in the Capitol. What are you securing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, the security system is an entrance and exit security system, just like you have at the Capitol now. It's a card system, a card lock system, where you can program who can come in and who cannot. It's a Mosler system, and Mosler went bankrupt, and it's our understanding that the entire Capitol Mall area is going to have their systems replaced within the next probably 2 to 5 years with DAS, and that's another reason we could reduce it from here. We don't know how much that's going to cost to replace.
So that's the piece that's deferred to the e-board.
Yes.
Right. Center of Dukes has a huge...
Oh, Center of Dukes.
Oh, I
you,
was just...
You've got to quit hiding behind Sue here. I can't see you.
I wasn't even going to comment. I was just smiling. Leave it to us. We found a company that was about to go bankrupt.
Or maybe we bid them so low that we forced them to go bankrupt, too.
Well, I swear we get into a leaky boat and then we bring all the tackle boxes we can find.
Okay, Representative Morgan, are you ready for voting?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to policy package 104 as it relates to building systems maintenance in the Common School Fund program.
Hear the motion. Is there discussion? Board discussion? Objection. Motion carries.
And then
Steve just informed me, Representative Morgan, or Representative Morgan's leaving the room.
Is there a mistake? Do we need to come back to it?
Well, I was just going to say on the waterway leasing position, Steve just informed me that the total amount is a gross revenue figure, $700,000. So we would just need to deduct the basically $150,000 from the $700,000, and that would tell you how much that's returning on a net basis.
Okay. Shouldn't change your. Will that change your? No.
That's Mr. Chair. That's policy option package 101.
Okay. Sorry. We didn't do that anyway.
You deferred it. If you feel this now gives you enough information to approve it, you can do that.
Let's wait till we get the principal.
Two more people.
Okay. Let's try the next one.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to go see if I can round up a couple?
Well, they're just in the hall. Go ahead and present it, and when they come in, we'll...
Policy option package 106 is the next one. That's at the top of page 3, and in your notebook, that's discussed on page 28 in tab 3. And this establishes one limited duration unclaimed property administrative specialist position that would assist with estate duties and reconciliation of trust records and accounting records, and this is in response to a Secretary of State audit. They recommended that there be additional staff resources to provide appropriate separation of duties within the agency. It would also create a limited duration seasonal office specialist to work during the reporting cycle for unclaimed property and assist in entering reports and doing inventories of safe deposit box contents. The package is for $127,525 other funds and 1.33 FTE and two limited duration positions. What LFO is recommending is that you approve the package for $120,334 other funds and one limited duration position at a 0.92 FTE, and that represents phasing in the position. It's now July 1st. It'll probably take the agency a couple of months to do the hiring, and so that just reflects 22 months out of the 24 in this biennium. What the LFO recommendation does is reduce the package by $6,754 in personal services and $437 in S&S, again due to the probable hiring delay. And then LFO also recommends that you direct the agency to use contracted or temporary services instead of the requested seasonal position.
Okay. Andy Morgan? Are you ready to make a motion?
Well, I know this is one that Representative Johnson was interested in.
Oh,
so
okay.
We're doing package 106.
Representative Johnson?
I guess I would. I apologize for having to step out. Just renew my question about how it is that you intend to address some of the shortcomings that were brought forward in the audit.
Senator Meserly, Representative Johnson, there were a number of shortcomings that were found in the audit. We've addressed, I believe, virtually all of them. What remains to be addressed is what we weren't able to do within our current 2001-03 budget. This allows us to deal with some of the remaining issues in the audit. Let me turn it over to Jeanette to speak about that in a little more depth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the primary concern was there were two concerns. One is the dual custody issue, as well, when we have an estate administrator going out to look at an estate. And I think the other part of the issue is just a separation of duties within the office. It's, you know, so that we don't have the same person or people entering information about doing an inventory and then also entering information about a claim, so that, you know, along the steps of processing either an estate or an unclaimed property claim, we don't have people having access to the whole system.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that completely. Some of the other pieces to me seemed almost breathtakingly simple. Get a good lock on the door. Make sure the facility is secure. I'm hoping you can reassure us today that that's all been taken care of.
Senator Mesley, Representative Johnson, they have.
Good.
We took care of those immediately when we learned of them. So we've changed the locks. We've increased the security on the safes. We've ordered safes. Mm-hmm. The safes are in now. We've changed the computer system. We've gone through and systematically did all that was asked of us. The only thing we couldn't do was this part that required additional staffing.
So at this point, everything except the dual custody and the separation of responsibilities has been achieved. That was called out as deficient in the audit.
Yes, but there were, the only thing I say, there were a couple things that we did talk with the auditors about, and we took a slightly different approach that they then agreed to. Is that, Jeanette?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm trying to think through our list of 40 items that we had in the audit that we put together afterwards. But there are still some reconciliations for some stock that are outstanding. We had some stock that we had to trace back to a number of years, like 10 years ago, where there had been splits and mergers, and it's just a time-consuming effort, and in some cases it's been very, very difficult to find out where those stock, who to allocate them properly to.
I'm sorry, I forgot that.
That's probably the major one that we're still working on.
At the risk of beating this horse to death, one more. Is that the kind of thing that you would contemplate in the note that I see here, using the agency to use contracted services or temporary services? Having done that once for an estate when I acted as the executrix, I found rather than me as an amateur starting with a blank piece of paper that I could buy those services rather handily from a brokerage firm. I guess I'm trying to get some sense when those instances present themselves where you have a certificate that maybe has a long history with it, with numerous changes, company acquisitions, deacquisitions, all that sort of stuff, that you would look for expertise rather than having someone in your office with a blank piece of paper start the work.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we do have a stockbroker on contract, and he does assist us in doing some of that. The other part of that is, I guess, simply tracing it through there is part of it. The other part is making sure that our unclaimed property system is also correctly, you know, reflects it correctly. But we do use a stockbroker. The other kinds of things that we are contemplating doing more contracting for are some of the estates duties, cleaning estates. You know, once we go in and make sure that there's not, you know, $50,000 in cash on hand, you know, hidden in grocery bags, then we are looking to contract with private firms to do the cleanup and to do, you know, basically take it from there. And some of those things.
I can get you one more.
Are your people bonded?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, this state has a blanket $250,000 bond for all employees.
Thank you.
Representative Morgan, do you have a motion prepared for this?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to policy package 106 relating to improving trust policy, fiscal controls, and outreach in the Common School Fund budget program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, policy package 107, which is also described on page 26 in tab 3 of your presentation document, adds expenditure limitation and positions to provide staff to focus on permitting for bridge and highway work, and these are positions funded by ODOT. It would continue support started in the 0103 biennium through emergency board approval. The package requests $291,388 other funds expenditure limitation and two FTE, two positions. And what LFO is recommending is that you approve the package for $262,464 other funds and two limited duration positions, 1.92 FTE. LFO's recommendation reduces the package by $9,958 in personal services and $18,966 in S&S, primarily to reflect a probable hiring delay of 2 months for one of the positions. One position is already there as the limited duration position that was approved by the emergency board in 0103.
Questions of the staff? Senator Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to policy package 107 in the Common School Fund program.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, policy package 109, which is discussed on page 25 of your document, would just simply add some expenditure limitation for rental increase for the Bend office. And in previous times, the division was able to absorb the cost increases for the rent, and they can no longer do this. And so this would add $28,309 other funds expenditure limitation. The LFO recommends approval of the package.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to policy package 109 in the Common School Fund programs.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, policy package 110 is the next one. This is discussed on page 26 of the presentation document. This would add a limited duration position, which you heard earlier will focus on land management issues in eastern and central Oregon. The package requests $148,691 other funds and one FTE, a limited duration position. What LFO is recommending is that you approve the package for $136,941 other funds and the one limited duration position, but at a 0.92 FTE. Again, this would reflect a probable hiring delay of 2 months. It reduces the package by $9,958 in personal services and $1,792 in services and supplies.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, the questions?
Sure.
The source of this funding is the Common School Fund again. And I noticed that the co-chairs, there's it's section E on other budget notes on the last page, and it says the subcommittee expressed interest in a budget note for tying new positions to performance. The co-chairs did not approve a budget note of this type. And the discomfort that I have with this is that I think it's really important for us to make sure that the money that we're taking out of the Common School Fund is actually resulting in more money coming into the fund. And I'm really reticent to okay a position if we don't have the ability to make sure that it is generating revenue.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, LFO recognizes that the subcommittee did express interest in tying performance and positions to performance, and that's one reason why in the final motion section you'll see that I'm recommending that you not make a final motion on the budget today so that there can be more discussion about that issue.
Mr. Chair, I was just curious. I'm assuming the agency has something on this policy package that would give us their basis for thinking this position will incur some money. I don't remember this one, but then I don't remember half of this. So
let me invite Steve up here too to join me on this one.
Yeah, but I didn't see the basis for it. Usually we expect this to achieve X number of dollars, and this is how we plan to get there. So that's what I was
looking
for.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Perch, Assistant Director for Field Operations. Let me address Senator Duke's question. Here are the things that I wrote to staff about my expectations for this position. Inspect all agricultural leases for lease compliance. Currently, we do not do that. We have 9 agricultural leases bringing about $170,000 biennium. We have not looked at those property in years. So we want to make sure that our lessees are compliant, not doing things they shouldn't do. It could result in some increased revenue. Resolve 5 trespass investigations annually. We currently have 40 identified trespass issues in eastern Oregon. Those trespass issues have to do with people who are moving sand and gravel from our uplands, people who are cutting down juniper trees and selling them commercially. We're not able to track those folks down and get them under lease. Review 5 parcels of the state-owned lands for sale annually. A number of years ago, at the request of the state legislature, we put together an asset management plan. Asset management plan identified certain isolated parcels of forest land and unleased range lands. We would like to look at selling those unleased lands and non-productive lands, put that money in the Corpus Common School Fund, or use it for other purposes.
We believe that just the sale of those lands alone will more than pay for this position by a significant amount, because we have lands that are currently not really being utilized.
I'd like to point out, Senator Dukes, too, that at the FNW, I believe, quite recently, tried to fence some of their property that they'd let a neighbor use for some time, and the neighbor was claiming adverse possession. So I think there is a need to keep track of what's going on.
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, it sounds like this is a fiduciary responsibility of the land board. It seems to me that when it's in the Constitution, your lands, and they're all tied up that way, that letting people walk off with them probably isn't viewed as a good thing by the auditors.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. It also strikes me that some of this is probably criminal. To what degree do you involve the police?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, if we know who the trespass folks are, then we would involve OSP in an investigation. We've done that in the past. A lot of the times when we are made aware that something has happened in Eastern Oregon, and by the time we can travel to get there, it's done. And we don't always know who took the juniper, for example, unless we're fortunate enough to find out that they've sold the juniper and turned that into us. But we do involve OSP.
Even if we're not regularly meeting with our lessees and checking out our land, we may not know that for a long time.
Side by side
to this discussion, we have, I mean, there is a policy package on the table that continues a person that is working on rangeland leasing. But what I hear you say is that that person will just continue to work on rangeland leasing, and that this second person will add additional duties back there on the east side?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that's correct. The range position is to focus on the development of rangeland health standards and revising our range management plans, as well as tracking the 144 grazing lessees that we currently have. And all those folks are under contract. We had talked earlier about potential lawsuits, and one of the things we're very concerned about is we cannot tell a lessee or a potential person who's interested in what we're doing out on our rangelands what those standards are. We're in the midst of developing that right now. And we put those performance measures in that rangeland position. This position is different. It's not going to focus on rangelands as much as other property management issues that we have to deal with on the east side of the mountains, where we have the bulk of our uplands.
We have lands ranging from up in Boardman with agricultural and poplar leases to the Steens Mountain and rangelands to isolated forest tracts to even some potentially urban areas that are or that could be part of the urban growth boundary outside of Redmond. So there's a range of different types of property management activities. I think that we've just barely scratched the surface of what we can provide in a return to the Common School Fund.
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I might comment, I recognize the case that they've laid out for the need for the position. My heartburn is, if it's a limited duration position, how are we going to gauge whether it's actually bringing more revenue into the Common School Fund if we can't ask that question? I'm curious about what the co-chairs, what their basis was for rejecting our ability to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm not sure.
Well, we'll have to push a little harder on that. And, of course, the next biennium, next budget session, it would be very appropriate to ask the same question and have them establish the data for it.
Senator Messerly, Representative Morgan, I fully expect that when I come back here in 2 years and I have to present my budget again, as Senator Messerly was saying, I'm going to have to provide a justification for you, which means I'm going to have to present to you what exactly has that position done and, you know, does it merit continuing on. So, you know, I fully expect that I'm going to have to address that question one way or another.
Mr. Chair, would it be possible then to put language in the budget report that the committee has an expectation that this that in the next budget cycle when we discuss this position that the agency will bring forward information as to how the position has been able to maximize resources going into the Common School Fund?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, that is possible.
I have one more question. I'm wondering, when you're talking about land management, you're also talking about mineral rights, and I would imagine on the vast lands we have in eastern Oregon, as well as all over the state, that must be a factor that takes a considerable amount of time as well, doesn't it?
Senator Messerly, that's true, because we have geothermal, we have other types of mineral rights. There's And we've not really been able to devote, I think, the time that we need to them. Steve, who is a mining engineer by background, can probably elicit more on that than I can.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I could probably talk for hours about that issue, but I'll keep it brief. We own 3.5 million acres of mineral rights statewide. And Oregon, unfortunately, is not a mineral-rich state, but there are mineral resources available, and we're starting to get more interest in those all the time. The Bureau of Land Management recently adopted through their new energy policy the desire to increase geothermal resource development. We have the only known proven geothermal resource area in Oregon is on our state lands.
Thank you. Representative Moore.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on policy package 110 with the addition to the budget narrative that we previously discussed in the Common School Fund program.
Approve the motion. Is there a discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the final policy option package in this budget unit is package number 111, and it's called Increase Information Systems Capacity. And this is to add limitation to replace servers and obsolete work sessions. And the original request was for a $75,000 other funds expenditure limitation increase. What LFO is recommending is that you approve the package for $30,000 other funds expenditure limitation. station. And this would allow the agency to replace approximately a quarter of its workstations that are 3 to 5 years old, and it also allows them to purchase 5 new printers.
Let me be clear on this. You're replacing workstations that are 3 to 5 years old?
Computer workstations, Mr. Chair.
Computer workstations. Doesn't say that.
Sorry.
So I'm just going to make a joke that we're living and working in stations that are 40 years old, I think.
But you have new chairs, Mr. Chair.
Not in my office.
We don't talk chairs.
Ms. McGlashan, would this put them on a four-year cycle for replacement?
I believe that's the case. It puts them on a four-year cycle at this point.
Are you ready?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the ELBO recommendation to policy package 111 in the Common School Fund program.
Thank you for the motion. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection? Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify that you still wish to defer policy option package 101. Representative Morgan, I believe you were out of the room when the agency came back with some additional information on that. For the waterway leasing, the total revenue generated is $700,000. That's gross revenue. So if you reduce that by the cost of that position, the net revenue is approximately $550,000.
Okay. In that case, Mr. Chair, I would be willing to make a motion on that if you are interested in having that happen.
I'd be most interested.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on policy package 101 in the Common School Fund program.
You've heard the motion. Is there more discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, if you'll turn to page 4, the next budget unit is for the South SLU. And again, there's some historical data for that program at the top in that first table. The next table includes the technical adjustments, the first one being 001 for the employee compensation freeze, eliminating the 2003-05 merit increases in the budget. And in so doing, that reduces the budget by $25,456 other funds and $14,720 federal funds. By eliminating inflation in package 003, except for facilities rental and AG and state government service charges, that reduces the budget by $7,387 other funds and $18,268 federal funds. And finally, in 004, the Attorney General rate reduction reduces the budget by $360 other funds.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendations on adjustment package 001, 003, and 004 in the South Sioux National Estuary Research Reserve.
Thank you. Is there discussion of the motion? Objection. Motion carries. Sue, why is there such a reduction? I know we've gone through this, but I just don't remember. Why is there such a reduction in the federal funds?
Mr. Chair, I have to look that up, and in the meantime,
I believe that's because there was a grant that we received for the capital construction of the addition to the South Slough facility, so we no longer have that.
And Mr. Chair, now that the agency has responded, that rings a bell, and I would concur with that. In the next section, you have the policy option packages. The first one is 103, and that simply continues limited duration positions for estuary monitoring and visitor services. One is a natural resource specialist position, and the other one is a public services coordinator position. That package is for $217,703 federal funds and 2 FTE. And LFO recommends that you approve the package.
Before we get a vote on these packages, I want to clarify. I thought that the administration of the sanctuary was supposed to be split 50-50.
Senator Meserly, that is correct. However, we have certain positions that are only federal funded, and these two positions are only federal funded. So, for example, Mike Graybill's salary is part common school fund, part federal fund.
But for the total operation, does it equalize out 50-50 or does it not hold true?
Almost 50-50. I think we get a bit more in federal and other funds coming in from other grants than what we have for the contribution from the Common School Fund.
Actually, I think it's just the opposite. You get a bit more from other funds.
That's because some of the money comes in as other funds. For example, a grant that we get from the University of Washington to conduct research comes in as other funds.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a process question, too? If we were to make a policy decision to wean the research reserve off of the Common School Fund, would that have the impact of diminishing the federal funding that they were able to take?
My understanding, Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, is that yes, it would, that there is a match required for those federal funds. Is that correct?
So at that point, the avenue that would be open to them would be grants and donations and other things like that.
That's one possibility, I suppose, Mr.
Chair. Is there a limitation on them in moving in that direction?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I don't believe so, other than there would be other parties interested in participating in supporting the program, whether that's by user fees or grants. Donations.
Representative Morgan, I'm not sure. At least I understood the answer to the question. Because the operations has to be split 50-50, but that doesn't bind us as to where we get those funds for our 50%. In other words, we could lease property, just as an example, knowing that there's no arrangement at this time that way, to the Marine School. And that could cover part of our cost. Is that not true?
Senator Mesley, a couple things. First of all, in our work plan on South SLU, we did say that we were going to explore options for other funding mechanisms, such as an increased assessment for user fees and leveraging more federal and outside funding sources. I just spoke with Craig Young, who's the director of the University of Oregon Marine Science Laboratory yesterday, and I asked him about the possibility of having the Marine Science Laboratory pick up some share for that the Common School Fund is now. He said that his budget precludes him from being able to do that, the limited funds that he has. But on the other hand, they are a partner with South SLU, and they actually provide a contribution to South SLU by providing us with office and workspace down at the laboratory where Steve Rumrill and some of his people work, as well as providing access and use of their equipment, their library, and the dock that they have. But we will try to explore what we might be able to do with the next biennium, such as, for example, if somebody's using the new site and they're wanting to rent it out for some reason, maybe, you know, that we would look at being able, charging for that as a way to generate some money for South SLU.
You count the in-kind from the university, the Marine Science Center, as part of the match from the state of Oregon?
Senator Mazza, that's a good question, because after talking with Craig Young, that's something I think we need to explore. But at this point, I don't know, because I don't know to what extent they get their money and how much they get it from federal funds, so you may not necessarily be able to leverage one federal funds against another. So we have to see what the basis of that would be and to see if that would be a possibility. But we would like to explore ideas like that.
Is it true that you do not charge for public access or public tours in the sanctuary?
Senator Meslett, we don't charge for if somebody is visiting the South through like an entrance fee. I believe there are charges we have, and I'm not certain, maybe you don't know. We may have charges if there's a special program where we take people like canoeing out on the SLU. And looking and talking with other estuaries, that is a potential to explore.
I know there's been interest in the community of allowing tour buses to bring in groups and do a tour through the sanctuary. I think there is interest on the committee to
reduce the amount of common school fund to operate the sanctuary.
And we will look into that and then report back to you, you know, what we end up finding out. And if we find anything that would be real beneficial, we will certainly let you know.
Do you want a motion?
Sure. You're ready.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on policy package 103 for the South Slough Research Reserve.
Thank you for the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And then, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, policy package 112, which is discussed on page 29 of your presentation document, simply reclassifies a position, a natural resource specialist 3, to match the compensation for that position with two existing positions with similar duties. The budget request is for $3,611 other funds and $7,626 federal funds. What LFO is recommending is that you approve the package with modification to eliminate the merit increase, and so the package that's recommended is for $1,755 other funds and $3,684 federal funds.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to policy package 112 in the South Slough Research Reserve.
Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And finally, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, in this budget unit, there is a supplemental request to the governor's budget. It doesn't ask for any expenditure limitation, but it does ask for four FTE, four positions, and this would simply continue limited duration positions supported by federal and other funds for various operations such as maintenance, training, research, and restoration monitoring.
Thank you. What does this mean? How do they pay for it?
These are primarily federal funds, and there are grant funds, so there's not common school fund money associated with these. They there are four current positions that we have. The problem when we did our budget is that we weren't sure if we were going to have that funding continue. They were limited duration positions, so we didn't include them in the governor's budget. Since then, we've gotten confirmation that that grant funding would be continuing into the next biennium. So that involves a Laborer 1 position, a coastal training coordinator position, an estuary and habitat assessment researcher, and a restoration monitoring coordinator. As I mentioned, that none of them are new positions. They're ones that are currently there.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And all of these would be subject to the same strictures, COLAs, merit, all the rest of that, even though they're federal funds.
Correct. So it would be if you eliminate the merit increase, because they are state employees, if you eliminate the merit increases for others, you eliminate it for them, too.
Ready?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the supplemental request to the governor's balanced budget for staffing at the South Slough Research Reserve.
Thank you for the motion. Is there a discussion of the motion? Objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Durbin.
Before we leave this section, can I ask a question? Sure. I'm doing all of this predicated on the belief you have dealt with the cozy relationship between the Friends Group and the gift shop. Would that be a correct assumption?
Senator Duke, Senator Messerly, thanks to the passage of Senate Bill 311, that now allows us to enter into agreements with voluntary groups such as the Friends of South Slough. We intend to do that. So that would then deal with that issue in terms of the shop. We actually even had an internal auditor from within the agency go in and look at the practices of that shop to make sure that it was adhering to proper fiscal management. But we will enter into an agreement with them so it clearly spells out what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing.
So we'll enter into a closed agreement with one organization and not put that out for bid?
We will look at what we need to do with that with that shop and whether or not, you know, we should or can lease with them. They provide a position to help us out with
the reception area. It's a very small little, there's not much there, but it is one that we are going to have to spell out in that agreement and have to look at if that's the proper way of doing it.
Mr. Chair, I've mentioned this before. I have a difficulty when the state gets involved and spends money, and whether it's a state park or it's the South Slough or whatever in places, and then cuts a nice deal with some organization and they benefit from that deal. And they don't put it out for bid, and they don't, I mean, there may be the, you know, friends of the Schnauzers that decide they'd like to be able to sell T-shirts and hats there as well, and they will never have an opportunity to do that because we decide that somebody who's intent upon benefiting us are the ones that should get the benefit out of it, when the truth is that the money we're investing is public money, and I think everybody ought to have a shot at it. So I had that problem when it was state parks. I have it with South Slough as well. And there may be others out there that I have it with that I just don't know about yet. But I understand that it benefits them and it benefits us, but there's a broader group out there that ought to be taken into account as well.
As you recall, Senator, we got into this pretty thoroughly during the public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that it's going to be resolved both with the bill and with the management in the work plan.
If it sounds as though the agency believes that the bill just gives them the opportunity to go and enter into a contract with a friends group and without looking any broader, and quite honestly, the notion that, well, it's okay because they give us a volunteer doesn't make me any more satisfied. And we've taken one group, and because they do good things for us, we've said, therefore, you get to sell your merchandise in our property, and nobody else is going to do that.
I hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Well, I don't disagree with my colleague in the main body of her comments. I just want to make the observation that I have the privilege of cleaning toilets in a city property for the city of Portland based on a single source agreement where the advocacy group does so much to move the entire enterprise forward, including saving the city from spending $57,000 a year on maintenance of one of their pieces of property because a volunteer group comes in. I don't disagree with the philosophical perspective that you're sharing, but I also don't want the state to be in the position of turning our back on volunteers who step forward and help in instances where maybe others would not want to.
I don't want to do that either, but my guess is you're not making any money off cleaning those toilets.
Damn right. I got to bring my own sponge.
Therein lies the difference.
Point well taken.
We need to clean this committee up.
I will say that the Friends of South Slough have, in recent years, have done really good things in terms of raising money for South above and beyond the gift shop. And they've raised, I think, $150,000 to $200,000 for the new facility.
That doesn't buy them a right to a contract.
Point's been made. Thank you. We've got, 3 minutes left, and we want to make a break here and try to get another day.
Mr. Chair, I think we might be able to get a couple, at least one more budget.
Okay.
But before I continue that, I think I need to clarify something for the record on policy package 111 and the Common School Fund program script. In the morning, we asked if the replacement of a quarter of the workstations meant they were on a four-year cycle, and I responded yes. I believe that puts them actually on an 8-year cycle because it's a quarter each biennium. So I just wanted to clarify that. The next program unit is the Natural Heritage Program on page 5. And again, historical budget data at the top of the page is there for you. There are two technical adjustment packages. The first one is 003, the inflation adjustment. This reduces general fund by $925 and other funds by $45. And then the Attorney General rate reduction reduces the budget by $100 general fund. And just to point out, there are no positions in this budget unit. And the big drop from the 0103 budget to the both the governor's and the LFO recommended budget is primarily due to the transfer of the database activities over to OSU.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on reduction packages 003 and 004 as they relate to the Natural Heritage Program.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And the next budget unit is the Oregon Wetlands Revolving Fund. There are no recommended adjustments to this budget, so that it would continue at the level recommended in the governor's budget, and that would be for $350,000 other funds.
Does that require a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that we accept the LFO recommendation and make no adjustments to the Oregon Wetlands Revolving Fund.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And the last budget unit, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Chair, just to get through all of these, on page 6 is for capital improvements in the Common School Fund. There's one technical package. This is the inflation adjustment. This would remove $12,810 other funds from the budget.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation on standard reduction package 003 and the Capital Improvement Common School Fund.
Discussion? Objection? Motion carries.
And the one policy package, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, is policy package 108. This would provide limitation for fire suppression and rehabilitation related to fire damage. It's requesting 150,000 other funds. LFO is recommending that you deny the package, and the reason for this is just based on a review of the planned projects for the 0305 biennium. LFO believes the agency right now has sufficient limitation to absorb the costs associated with this package, but if there are unanticipated costs incurred, they can always come back to the emergency board and request additional limitations.
Mr. Chair, could I ask a question?
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Flashen, is this the same situation as Forest Rehab, where they can spend the funds without having to come to the e-board before for the limitation?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I'm not familiar with Forestry's budget, so I'm not qualified to answer that question, except I can say that this agency would need limitations before they spend the funds.
Senator Messley, Representative Morgan, the lands that we would be paying for in terms of fire are ones that are not protected by the Department of Forestry, and they're ones that are considered unprotected. However, we now have a fire contract with the Bureau of Land Management.
Oh, so you're reimbursing.
So we're reimbursing the BLM. I would like to say on this that it really will depend on how bad of a fire season we have and what we can absorb within our capital improvement budget. And you know, in this, it would be the roughly about $400,000. So if we would have a major rangeland fire that we can't accommodate, we'll have to do what we've done in the past, which is come to the emergency board and show you what we've spent and then ask for approval to spend that. The reason why we had put $150,000 in the budget was so that, I guess now that we had had the contract negotiated with the BLM, which was the first of its kind in the western states, it would have provided some assurance to the BLM that, you know, we had the money there to pay them, particularly if we had a larger fire.
I think, though, that the state has a long-standing and clear record of standing behind reimbursing our firefighting costs, so I feel confident that it means as you are behind a contract here, and the state has honored this over time, that denying the request isn't going to put the agency in a compromised position.
And Senator Messerly, Representative Morgan, actually similar to what you did with reflecting it in the budget report, if you could have some language that reflect that in the budget report, then that will give, you know, even greater assurance to BLM. So that would be helpful if you would
entertain doing that.
Well, and we have this discussion on the record here, too.
That would true. And that works as well.
Okay. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation to Policy Package 108 in the Capital Improvements Common School Fund.
Thank you for the motion. Is there discussion? Objection? Motion carried.
Does that complete our work for the day?
Mr. Chair, if you'd like to stop here, that would be fine.
We're over time now. And committee, since some of you have mutinied on me for Thursday, we will not have committee meeting Thursday. So
you have?
So the rest can mutiny?
Yeah, right. So we can all leave. So with that, we'll close the work session on health or whatever this is.
I
need
to
get about 55:27 and the committee meeting. Thank you. What did you say?